Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of How I Teach Golf. I'm your host, Duncan Walger, and I'm going to welcome someone who I was asked to get on the podcast. Some of the feedback I got was, Duncan, enjoying the podcast, but you haven't had any female or lady professionals on so far. So I thought, who do I know? Who can I remember spending some times at the swing zone giving free 15-minute golf lessons to open championships, someone I've known through social media for a good few years, and very, very lucky to have today on the podcast of How I Teach Golf is Denise Hastings. Denise, how are you?
Yeah, great. Thanks, Duncan. How are you?
Really, really well. So, Denise, for those listening to the podcast, please tell me a bit about yourself, how you got into the game of golf, what golf was like for you growing up, first of all.
Oh, how long have you got?
the podcast is yours, so we can go for at least an hour.
Okay. Well, I came into golf in probably a different way to a lot of the guys we've spoken to so far. Neither my mum or dad played golf, or at that point anybody in my family. Coming from Liverpool, I lived near a golf course. It was called Boodle Golf Course. It was municipal, and you could more or less see it from one of the bedrooms in our house, and I had to walk past it every day to go to school. So, I was one of those rebellious children who used to run across the golf course and not steal golf balls, but try and find them, but had no use for them once I'd found them. Yeah. And one summer, I was taken down to the putting green. A Bootle golf course in those days, there was no driving range as such, but there was a putting green where you hired a putter and a ball and off you went. I like a bit of this. So at the age of 12, I was there all summer. So much so that the pro there, the guy at the time, was a guy called Fred Lloyd, who's passed away since. Said to me, do you really want to play this game? And I said, oh, yeah. So he said, right, ask your mum for a pound. And I'll get you some golf clubs. So I trundled off home, said to my mum, oh, there's this guy, Mr. Lloyd. He said, if I give him a pound, he'll give me some golf clubs. And he said, do you really want to do it? I said, oh, yeah. So off I went down the next day, gave him the pound. And I got, I think, 3 wooden shafted golf clubs. It was, I think it was something like a 3-wood, a 7-iron, a pitching wedge, something like that. And I had a putter because at this point, because I'd been on the putting green a lot, I'd bought a putter. Mum had bought a putter rather. And off I went, really, because all the golf balls that I'd found, I used to go and bash balls up and down the football field until I was kicked off by the cocky watchman for ruining the goal man. So I got into golf that way. I was fortunate enough to come across a guy who ran the junior section at Bootle Golf Club at the time, a guy called John Mulvey, who was probably, I would say, my first mentor. He was an incredible guy. He played off about 2 or 3, and he had all these juniors around him. He was like the Pied Piper, and he was an amazing fella. And over the years we were there as juniors, I reckon, including myself, I guess 8 or 10 turned pro. We had a great selection.
Well, that's a big number, isn't it? Out of a junior section from one club.
Oh, absolutely. And the fact that it was a municipal as well. You know, we used to have matches because John was really sort of really, really bright guy. And he got in touch with people like Wallasey and Hillside. And we used to play matches against them. So, we were a bunch of muni kids going off to these park places and beating them, which was brilliant, really.
So what age did you turn pro? What was your route into the PGA?
Okay, so my route into the PGA was I was fortunate enough to join a golf club called West Lancs, which is a superb golf course. And I then got Lancashire coaching, was was looked after by a lady called Frances Bunty Smith, who was at the time, she was an England selector. She won the British Open. She was an amazing woman. And there's a massive painting of her still to this day at Royal Birkdale. So she was awesome. So I did the normal stuff, played for the county and all that. And fortunately met an awful lot of people who are still my good friends, such as Maxine Burton. And the tour started in 79. And in 1978, we were all asked, would we like to turn pro? And it was like, well, we've been playing amateur golf since we were, 14, 15. Why not? We took the plunge. The money was there. Carlsberg was the main sponsor. And we played for £100,000 that year. That was total purse.
Okay.
Which is absolutely peanuts now for what the boys and girls play for. And it was just such a learning curve, because one day we're amateurs all playing off, anything from 2 to +2. We're golf pros, and there's no different. We just woke up the next day and we're not amateurs anymore. We had no benchmarks. We just went out and played golf. And it was great fun. It was hard because we were virtually nothing when you look at what they're doing today. Carlsberg events where the winner got £200. I think the total purse for the 3 or 4 days was £2,000. So that's how the European tour started. And I was real lucky to be at the right place, right time. And I wasn't, by any stretch of the imagination, successful, but I really enjoyed it. And then coming to the end of that, it was like, I've done 8 years. I'm not going anywhere. My sponsor pulled out on me and said, look, I'm not doing this because we don't like you, but you've got to make a decision what you want to do. And you're clearly not as successful as you want to be or we want you to be. So that was a real tough one, Unfortunately, we were playing at a tournament at Stoke Park, or Stoges, it was. Max said to me, Vivian Saunders is looking for someone to go and work with her at Abbotsley. And I said, where's Abbotsley? She's somewhere in Cambridge, I think. She said, why didn't you have a word with her? Well, it was easy to talk to Viv because she was one of my coaches on England coaching as a kid. So I believe you're looking for someone. She said, yeah, you'd be perfect. Come down and have a look. I said, are you sure? She said, yeah, come on. So sort of that would be September time. And I'd be 77, 78, something like that. And down to Abbotsley, had a look, had a think about it, went back, spoke to my parents. My mum said, well, your heart's in golf. Just do it. If it doesn't work, you can always come home. So packed my bag, packed the car up. And in November of that year, so that'd be 87, I started working for Vivian. And it was just unreal. I mean, it was so different from being on tour, with bakeries and things like that. But Vivian was a master at getting people better. I don't know how she did it at the time. She was just amazing. And I decided, I thought, right, I'm going to stick to her like glue, because the woman certainly has the Midas touch as well as superb knowledge on the golf swing. I watched, I reckon, for the first 18 months I worked for her, I watched her do every clinic. And I became a bit mini-me, because that was the way, that was the only way I knew. And then, obviously, then went through the PGA and realised there was a bit more to it than how she did it. And I wanted to not be her in her shadow. I wanted to do it for myself. So started doing golf schools. That was my first sort of thing of doing golf schools, was working at Abbotsley, working with her, then doing my own weekend schools. And then I got the offer of a job in Kent. The Jenny Lee Smith Golf Centre again. Jenny, who I knew from tour, she'd given up. She'd started to have babies and her husband had built this driving range. So she said, why don't you come down? So I went down. I was there for a year. And that was like, I didn't want to go because it broke my heart to leave Abbotsley, really, because I felt that was my second home. But I needed to stand on my own 2 feet and be a big girl and see if I could do it on my own. And it was hard because I had a house in Bedford and I was commuting to Kent. But I did it for a year and I worked alongside a guy called Andy Traynor, who now is out in the States doing, well, you know Andy, don't you?
I know Andy very well, yeah, he's out.
Worked together for 18 months or so, and I think we both left similar times. He went off to be a head pro somewhere else and I went back to Cambridge, and we had a great time. We learned a lot from one another and worked well. And then I moved back to Cambridge and I got a job at Kingsway Golf Centre, which was a brand new state-of-the-art driving range, so different from Abbotsley, and quite similar to the JLS, really, to be fair. And the guy that owned it, he said to me, he described it as a sausage factory. He said, you get them in, you get them out, you get them on the golf course, you give them 6 lessons, it costs this, blah, 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 off you go. And I'm going, oh, I'm not sure whether I can quite teach quite like that, but, you know, I'll give it a go. And in the end, you know, we did our own thing, and he wanted to tell us how to teach, and yet he was like a 15 handicapper. But I worked with a couple of really good pros there, and we ended up being silly busy. I mean, really silly busy.
Well, now then, or?
Sorry?
That's not where you
well,
are now.
I
though.
Actually still do 2 days there. I went sort of back and forward to obviously Vivian wanted me to go back and do the schools with her, did that for a while, and but I still went back to Kingsway for a couple of days. And then one of my assistants, who while I was at Kingsway, a guy called Garant Dixon, he got the job at Bedfordshire Golf Club and said to me, why don't you come and teach here? So I went, why not, let's do it. So I went, I've been at Bedfordshire Golf Club now probably about 7 or 8 years, working there. Brilliant. With him, and there's 3 other golf pros, and times have changed so much, but it's been one hell of a road, and it's been fun.
I mean, I always enjoy being in your company and kind of hearing your story and hearing your journey of coming through, and like you said at the start of the Ladies European Tour and that kind of thing. But have you found it, or how difficult have you found it, if I'm allowed to be really blunt and saying, you know, being in a kind of a men's world, starting all that sort of stuff out, or being, were you like the first female golf professional at any of your at Kingsway and then at Bedfordshire and that sort of stuff? How's that worked for you? How's that worked out?
Definitely being a woman in a man's world is tough, and in sport, definitely. I'm quite lucky. I'm a fairly strong person, I think, and I've taken quite a few knocks. But yeah, it's almost like you need to gain respect. You know, you need to, someone needs to have a lesson and go, ah, actually, she's all right. But for anyone, for other people to go, oh, okay then. So in the early days, it was a lot harder than what it is now. I remember being in the shop at Kingsway, and I was in the shop, I was with another one of my assistants, and we stood there, this guy, and he's big 6 foot, Neil Harvey, who's now, he's got a great job. We stood there in the shop, and this man came in, and he immediately spoke to Neil and said, oh, what about this golf club? What about that golf club? And how much is it to play? And, you know, just all the normal questions. And then he asked a few other questions about membership, and he said, well, you better ask my boss. And this guy said, well, who's your boss? And he sort of pointed at me and he went, you? But you're a... And I said, woman?
No.
And he went, oh, yes. Well, And he was a bit sort of taken aback. And that sort of thing happened a couple of times, but it certainly doesn't happen like that now, because there's enough of us, and the likes of Laura has made it, you know, Laura Davis.
Yeah.
And all the, you know, Trish Johnson and all the guys that, all the girls that have done really well on tours who've become household names. So it's made it a little bit easier, I think, for the girls who just now teach. Because it's, you know, we're recognised as, actually, they're all right.
Yeah. Well, that's good. I'm glad to hear it. I'm glad to hear it. So, Denise, tell me about your facility that you teach at most of the time. So what have you got there? What's at the facility?
Okay, at Bedfordshire Golf Club, we've got a really good 18-hole golf course, which is championship length. They moved there. It's actually quite an old golf club, but they lost the lease on the land due to motorways and things going through. So they rebuilt it out at Stagsden, and it's about 15 years old now, I think. Really nice golf course, pretty tough because it's almost like an inland links. It really gets quite windy, and we've got a very, very good par 3 golf course. The only thing it hasn't got, to be fair, are bunkers, but the greens were laid exactly the same as the golf course, and in fact the last hole is about 280 yards. It's a par four really. We've got a nice short game facility where a couple of really good big bunkers and a big green you can pitch to. Nice, good-sized putting green, and we've got a very good undercover driving range. We've got an indoor bit where we've got a GC2, and we can do club fittings. And you know, if anybody needs any help on the GC2, then it's there. So it's a really good facility.
Brilliant. What types of lessons do you actually give there? How would someone get in contact with you, and what's the process of when you meet them, or do you have a conversation with them before, or do they, you know, do they phone the shop and book in your diary and you meet them at the range? What kind of happens?
Well, it's a little bit of both, really. Some will ring me direct and said, you know, I've been recommended for you to give me some lessons. You know, well, what's the sort of the protocol, and I've got them on the phone, then I'll ask them a few things about what the golf is, you know, how much they've played, what the problems are, have they had lessons, and get a sort of an idea of what their problems are before we meet them. And then others will, you know, just ring up and say, I want a lesson on Wednesday, can Denise do it? Or through my website, I'll get emails through my website and good. Social media as well, which is quite good. Not so much, but you do get the odd one through Facebook and Twitter, which is really good. And then me, I reckon a bit of a jack of all trades, really. I teach complete beginners to professionals, so. The person that's in front of me is the person I'm dealing with at the time. So it can be, it can be a, you know, a 70-year-old lady who can't get it airborne, to a young guy who wants to get rid of his hook, you know, and anything else in between.
Brilliant. So I know that you've obviously spoken already to about some of your mentors, whether that be Vivian or, you know, when you worked with Andy and bits and pieces, but who would you say have been your biggest influences on your career, and especially coming up to date? I know that you've got some associations of people that you've kind of gone and seeked out to learn some new skills and bits and pieces. So talk a bit about that.
Well, when I came off tour, for the first sort of year, I don't think I played golf, to be honest. I played badly, and I just couldn't get my head around why it went, you know, one day I can shoot 71, why do I shoot 84? You know, where does all that come from? So I got a little bit fed up, and I got sort of big into the coaching side. And then I decided, well, actually, I'm going to go and have some lessons from different people. So okay. I went and had some coaching from Alex Hay, who also helped me while I was on tour, and he was brilliant, Alex. And then I also went and had some help from Tim Barter. And again, he said to me, "Why me?" And I said, "Because I like what you say. I like what you say on the TV." And he said, "Well, you might not like what I say to you." I said, "No, I know that, but you know, I explained that I'm now a coach. I want to teach, and I just want your take on what I'm doing." And he went, "Great." Mm-hmm. And so I spent a bit of time with Tim, and that really helped. It sort of, it was like you said earlier about being a woman in a man's world. You've got to be better than Joe Pro up the road. So your knowledge has got to be as good or better than them to get a bit of respect. And
Oh, it shouldn't be that way, Denise. Unfortunately, it's that's not real.
No, I know, but unfortunately, that's the way sometimes it comes across. And in the last 5 years, I spent some time with Andy Plummer and Mike Bennett, Beck and Till Boys, and that's just an incredible learning path. You know, it's just a different way of seeing things, and that's what I like about different people with different ideas. Is, you know, I was told at one point, you know, listen to everything. You don't need to use it all. You use what you want and disregard the rest. And I think that's probably the way I am with coaching. And like I said a little bit earlier, the person in front of me is the person I'm dealing with at the time, and you have to deal with them as and then. So the one thing I do like is watching other pros coach. I've had that opportunity up at the Open. It's great, really. You know, you're doing your bit, but when you've finished, I've sort of hung back a bit and watched the likes of master professional Peter Ball.
You watch Pete, eyes.
A man,
Pete's
unreal. How he can get people to do things. It's like, God, why would I never think of that? So I've got no problem. If I've got someone who I'm struggling with, and it's not, you know, normally the better player, I've got no problem in asking Pete's advice, because I think if one thing I've learned, if I don't know, I need to find out, and there's no point, you know, sort of pulling the wool over people's eyes, because they'll know if you don't.
Oh,
so I would rather go, look, leave it with me. I need to speak to someone. And yeah, I would say Peter is a mentor. So I'm really lucky there.
Yeah, number one, as we call him. Pete's great. I hope actually to get Pete on the podcast, but I'm not sure he's progressed to a telephone yet. So we'll see what we can do. We'll see what we can do. So what technology do you use, or training aids do you use in your lessons?
Well, like I said, we've got the GC2, so that's really good. It's really good for the better player, I think. But then saying that, some of them can get bogged down on spin rate and, you know, get too technical, and then they lose that natural ability of being able to just get it around the golf course because they're worrying about this spin and that spin. So, yes, I'll use that when necessary. Video, of course. I use poles, noodles, spray paint, dry shampoo is every bit as good as the old foot spray. Probably a bit cheaper. love chalk. Draw lines all over the carpets. balance boards like that to work on balance, and especially if someone's in rehab that's had, you know, dodgy knees or hips, then trying to get people balanced is a big thing. I've got loads of putting ones, still Kenyan stuff. I got loads.
So if you only had £100 Denise, what would you first of all spend on setting up an academy?
£100. Well, like most people, I guess, notebooks and pens. I think that is vital. I'm fortunate enough, I do golf schools abroad. One of the things we give to everyone on the golf schools with Tarleton is a notebook and pen. Chalk, poles, spray paint, foot spray, noodles, and ribbon as well. Ribbon, yes. Yeah, just to give people like targets and cones. I guess just the normal stuff, what most people would say. And you could probably have a fair few bob over after that.
Yeah, and then like I say, I think most people have come up to about maximum £50. Yeah. And then the other £50 we're spending on having a dinner and doing some informal learning with maybe Mike and Andy or something like
perfect.
That.
Perfect.
Brilliant. So you're obviously well travelled, and I know you have your kind of golf school holidays. Do you have a favourite course that you would like to play? And then secondly, just talk a little bit about your golf schools, how they came about and how often you do those. Because I know during the winter you do obviously a lot more, but just speak about those if you wouldn't mind.
Absolutely, no problem. How it all happened was the first couple of golf schools that abroad I did was at Le Mans, and it was with Christine Langford. And then working with Vivian, we used to get no end of people who used to come back time and time again. And I used to say to her, why do these people come back 3 times a year? And she said, well, they're paying your wages. I laughed. And she said, we forget. People forget. I went, okay, how naive am I? So one of these ladies came, and it was a lady called Ray Webster, Dr. Ray Webster. We just got on. And what happened then, at the end of that year, it must have been like September, October, she came on one of my weekend schools. And, okay. Oh, you ought to meet my other half. He's just bought a golf company. He's been in the car business, and now he's just bought this company, this travel company. So I went, yeah, because you know, you hear stuff like that all the time. Oh, meet this one, meet that one. I didn't think anything of it. Anyway, Ray called me. She said, here's Brian, speak to him. So I was like, oh. So I spoke to this guy, Scottish guy, and he said, oh, I think we should meet. So we met at a golf club, and he told me what he did. I told him what I did, and he said, right, okay, we're doing a festival in the middle of September at Al Miramar. Come out. So I went, oh, okay. So out, have a look at Al Miramar. And the first year I did one, I think, the first year. So that would be the following sort of March. And then it went from there. Brian and I get on really well. I was doing with Ray. We, the year, and then from there on in, I reckon I do 12 schools away, mainly Spain and Portugal, but we have gone to America as well. And we've also, which is really good, we come up with this all ladies pro-am. So we sat there and he says, how can we do this? He said, how can we make it cheap enough and get enough people, you know, bums on seats. So I was thinking, so we come up with this formula where the teams of seven, so you've got one lady professional and six amateurs. So the idea is the pro plays 9 holes with each group of three, you know, drop back after 9. And the best 4 scores out the 7 counts. So the pro's not under any sort of stress to mark a card. Their job is to look after their amateurs, because to start with, we mainly got all of the amateurs. Now we've gone from 8 the first year, and I think we had 22 this year. 22
teams.
And we've got them coming from Denmark, Sweden, Norway, Holland, Scotland, Ireland. Fantastic. It's just awesome. But can you imagine the noise 160 women make?
Yes.
It's great. It's really competitive. I mean, the amateurs vary handicap wise from plus one to 36, and it's just a great format. And the amount of people who come back year on year, like, it's just opened up for next year, and it's already, you know, half full almost. So I've been really lucky there to work alongside Brian and Tarleton Golf. And it's, yeah, this last 2 or 3 years we've been at El Rompido in Spain, not far from Huelva. Great venue, two good golf courses, great practice facilities, and it's almost like we take over the place, and we give it to them. We give them it back after a week. Say, there you go, looked after it well. Now it's yours. So yeah, it's good.
And how many years you done that now?
I think this year was its 16th.
Wow.
Yeah, 16th. It's grown. And we now do a mixed one as well, 3 men, 3 women. It's just brilliant how it's bloomed, really.
Yeah. So if you couldn't play any of those golf courses that you take your golf schools to, what would be your favourite golf course?
Well,
Denise?
My favourite golf course personally would be Royal Birkdale. Anything, actually, to be fair, I'm quite a biased northerner. Anything on the Lancashire coastline's good.
Well, it's not a bad coastline, is it, for golf?
But Birkdale would be my favourite. The hardest golf course I've ever played was Keir Island. Oh, my God. That was tough. And I'd like to go and play there again, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Okay.
It's all right, get rid of that.
Right. Prediction for the year, a golf prediction for the year.
Prediction to the year. I would love the LET to get back on track because we've got some good players. It's a tough prediction, but, you know, the quality's there. We just need some faith in some good sponsors to just trust the girls again. Trust isn't the right word, but it's just a shame that we worked so hard in the early 80s to all not go wrong, but it just hasn't progressed as we found the members would have wanted it to. So my prediction is, fingers crossed, that it will get they will get better. It will get better.
Yeah, I hope so. I'm with you 100% with that. You know, I remember when I was an assistant working at Moore Park under Lawrence Farmer, you know, we had a lot of the girls come up, you know, the England girls and then England ladies, and then a lot of the ladies European tour who were also playing on the LPGA or going to Australia or whatever it was, you know, came up and had lessons from Lawrence or just came up and played golf. And the tour was so strong.
Yeah.
It was so great. And I mean, I don't know where or why it kind of went on the little bit of a fall, and I just hope, same as you, Denise, that it can get back to where you know it's on the television on a regular, that it's on television regularly live, and you know the women that are actually out there on tour, they are fantastic. The pro-ams, not, you know, the way they look after the people in the pro-am is fantastic. They play great golf. It just needs that. I don't know what it is, because if I did, I would be more than happy to help. But I don't know what it is that it needs. I just hope it finds it.
Yeah, absolutely. The quality of the girls on tour now is unreal from what it was in the early days with us. Like I say, we were amateurs one day, pros the next. We had no benchmark. But the kids coming up through the ranks now, the top amateurs are all mini pros, really, by the time they qualify and they go through the tour school. And it is such a shame that they just don't have anything to play in. You know, a local event for us years ago in the early days, we mainly played in Britain. We were the first bunch of sports people to go to Northern Ireland since the Troubles. I think that would be 1980. We went to Belfast. We played Royal Portrush, and the welcome we got was unreal. And you know, it could get back, I'm sure, for the girl.
Yeah,
it just needs it. It's money. It's all down to money. Sponsors.
Okay, so our prediction and wish for the year is for the LET to get very strong again.
Oh, definitely.
Good. Denise, you are our guest of the day, so you get to ask question of the day. What would you like to ask our listeners?
Oh, okay. Well, I think really when they have lessons, they really want to go in with a clear view of what they want and always ask the pro, why do you want me to do this? You know, why do you want me to do that? Because I know what happened to me having some lessons once when I was on tour, and this guy was recommended to me, so off I went, and he spoke to me like I understood the movement in the golf swing. I didn't. I knew how to hit it. I knew how to get it round. And he baffled me, totally baffled me. And I swore then, if I ever taught, I would tell people what's wrong, why it's wrong, and what we're going to do to get it right. And when they have lessons, don't ask why. And then what? Then maybe you don't see them again, because maybe it's we've spoken in a different language to them. And I would definitely say, if you're going to have a lesson with anyone, say, why do you want me to do that? Explain that to me again. And I think that would make it easier for that person to understand the changes that needs to be made.
So question of the day would be, would I be fair in saying, question of the day for the people that take golf lessons, if it hasn't been explained to you in a way that you understand, please ask your instructor why.
Yep, absolutely.
Question of the day is why.
Yeah, absolutely.
Excellent. Denise, where can people find you on social media? I know that we're friends out on social media as well as in person, but where can people find you?
Okay, on Facebook, it's Denise Hastings Golf Schools. On Twitter, it's at Hastings Golf. Instagram is Denise Golf. My website is denisehastings.com. Dead simple, really. And Bedfordshire Golf Club is bedfordshiregolf.com.
And the holidays
is tarletongolf.com.
Tarletongolf.com. Yeah. Brilliant. Excellent. Denise, thank you ever so much. Thank you for literally explaining to me, which I'd never heard before, your journey, the struggles, which in my opinion are completely unfair, and apologies from your male counterparts for doing that. We're not all the same.
Absolutely.
But thank you very much for taking us through from your playing career, setting up the Ladies European Tour, and thank you for doing that. Thank you for everything that you do on behalf of the PGA, and from myself, I know all the work that you put in when you go to the PGA Swing Zone at the Open Championships, and I hope lots of people visit you. You're doing Carnoustie, I presume?
I am, yes. 3 weeks down.
How many Opens would you have done now?
This is about 14, maybe.
Fantastic. Yeah. So you've probably given... Oh, it must be going on towards, would I say, 1,000 lessons?
Yeah, possibly. You get 4 an hour, your session's 5 hours, and you're there 8 days. Yeah, quite a lot.
See, someone else can work out the maths on that. But yeah, and I hope they pop onto the into the Swing Zone, say hello to you, and give us some feedback on this podcast. It's been a real pleasure for me to have you on, Denise. Thank you ever so much for coming on. And I look forward to catching up with you soon.
Duncan, thank you very much. I'm really pleased you asked me. A bit shocked, really, because it's like there's so many other girls out there. But I'm sure you'll get a few more on. It's been a complete pleasure. And I look forward to catching up with you at some point. Thanks, Duncan.
Will do. Thank you. Take care.
Bye.
The podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app, free for iOS and Android.